We can start now.
The person we've been waiting for has arrived. The chairs this side, they've given me the responsibility to run this. I'm not sure whether this session. We have two sessions. One is a preferential procurement regulations draft. Preferential procurement regulations, and later, if I'm correct, Zarina will still have a workshop on Triple P, so we'll do that. They asked me to chair. In doing that, I would like to welcome all of you, and welcome Mr. Malila. We're informed that you were delayed. I don't know. You know, this committee is one of the main functions of committee is to make official accounts, and sometimes we make them account for everything, you know. But today we've accepted the apology. You'll just start with your presentation. Don't worry about the apology; it has been accepted. I want to introduce a special friend, Fiona Josi. Fiona? Now stand up, don't say I know. Okay. Fiona is at Settlers High School in Durban. So she's coming to do some shadow working with us. You're welcome, sister. Down. I hope that you will enjoy your stay with us here. Thank you very much. She aspires to be. She says she doesn't want to sit there at the back. She wants to sit here and take these officials to task. So she aspires to be an official. You're welcome. I mean, to be a politician. Yes. So she's saying. The time for women being in the kitchen, she says she believes that that is something of the past. I agree. She's a liberated young woman. We agree with you, Fiona. Eh? Enjoy yourself. Mr. Malina, over to you. Sorry, let me just... not assume that everybody knows everyone who is here. We have on my extreme left, not on my left, but on my left hand side, is the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Finance, Honorable Mfamadi. And in between sandwich is another proclaimer, Matulare, of the Chairperson of Economic Development. You know, when we chair, in other words, we're supposed to be the three committees here. This regulations has been referred to all of us, and the trade and industry had informed me that had informed us that the regulations have also been referred to them. But I think that what may be something that we need to sort out, Parliament needs to sort out, is if the regulations is referred to all the committees, more than one committee, then maybe there should be a kind of a driver, or the champion of a that particular subject, the regulations this time. I think that as time goes on, we will sort out who is who. But my gut feeling, if you were to ask me, I wouldn't think that we're the right people to champion it. I won't even say who do I think that is supposed to champion it. But it has to do with economic development. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thanks for accepting our apologies for having delayed the meeting. My colleague, Willie Matebula, will be joining us as well. He is also delayed. Just what I'm going to try and deal with today is just to give you a little bit of historic background of where we got to where we are now and what is it that we are aspiring in achieving, and the legislative environment that guides the process that we want to follow. As you know, these regulations have been put out for public comment on the Government Gazette. As they stand now, they are in for public comment until the 14th of September, which is Monday coming, where we shall have solicited all the public comments, and then the work will then continue to see how far we can go. The real purpose is to make sure that the preferential procurement is aligned with the broad-based black economic empowerment and its codes of good practice as they have been published. Just a little bit of background is government adopted a policy for procurement in a document that we presented on the 10th of September to the cabinet of the day, of the time. The document is referred to as the policy to guide uniformity in procurement reform processes in government. All of this was done because there was a study that was done by the World Bank and a study done by a private consultancy, international consultancy, Roger Webb, from Australia. And some of the recommendations that have put led us into coming to this particular instance of giving this policy document. And after it was approved on December 5th of the very same year, a framework was then gazetted, and was gazetted in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, Section 76(4)(c) thereof, and they were published as Chapter 16A of the Treasury Regulations on the 5th of March. We also do recognize that efforts from other quotas of trying to get this broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Act going ended up being promulgated somewhere in January of 2004. Now, just to give you a little bit of a legislative framework, on the top of the pyramid, it gives you all the legislations that we think are applicable in the acquiring of goods and services in the public sector. Firstly, is the Public Finance Management Act and the Municipal Finance Management Act that defines the accountability of various role players in this. And for adjudication purposes, we have got the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act and its associated regulations. Of late, we now have the BBBEE and its associated codes of good conduct. Having seen that, we also needed to also make sure that in terms of these regulations, there is uniformity in the public sector, that there is one way of procuring goods and services, not different ways in different organizations. Now, to strengthen that, we then made sure that we also give them guidelines which guided the accounting officers on how they should implement supply chain management. We also gave them standard bidding documents and practice notes to ensure that there is uniformity. Everyone has got the same interpretation of the Act. And over and above that, for the practitioners and the members of the various bid committees, a code of good conduct was also issued for the members. Now, why the reforms were necessary? they were necessary and they were meant to deal with replacing some very outdated ways of doing business, which was not very user friendly to the suppliers of goods and services. And it was also necessary for us to make sure that there is consistency in the application of the policies of government, and ensuring that the accounting officers take full accountabilities on the matters that relates to the expenditure on their on goods and services. So all these initiatives resulted in us introducing the integrated supply chain management system, which is currently in government. Just as a reminder, we also know that the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa has in it, and it talks very well about procuring of goods and services, the section referred to 217, that refers to the system that needs to be fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective, is entrenched in the Constitution. And furthermore, it also goes on to say it is the obligation of national legislation to prescribe a framework providing for preferential procurement. Obviously, it recognized the imbalances of the past, so it then referred to us having to introduce a preferential system. So the preferences are captured in the Constitution. That's why we have got a preference system. So in whatever system you come up of procurement, it goes back to the Constitution where it emanates. So then in the year 2000, this PFA was then enacted, and it had its accompanying regulations. Now, the current system as it stands is the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act refers to a 90-10 and an 80-20 preference point system. One should bear in mind that we're not talking percentages here, we're talking points. 90-10 points, 80-20 points. Mostly people tend to make a mistake of referring to these as percentages, because if you refer to them as percentages, you would get lost as to what kind of premium is government paying for acquiring goods and services on a point system. Now, the 10 or 20 points were to address specific RDP goals. There are 13 of those goals that we needed to address. Prime to those goals were the historically disadvantaged, small business, woman empowerment, disabled, local content, and a few other goals, but there are 13 of them. Primarily, those are the four or five goals that usually are utilized currently. So on the 90-10 point system, if you do quick calculations, you'll realize that should we acquire goods on the basis of that preference, government is paying a price premium of 11.1% on the 90-10 point system. On the 80-20, the premium is 25%. So maximum of 90 or 80 points you'd get to pay, that represents price. So you either are the lowest on price and then you score the maximum points, and the scale will then guide where you actually pitch on the basis of points. So the contractor or the bidder that would then get the highest score on points would then be allocated the business. And in the current system, for the 80-20 point system or the 90-10 point system, it's for all procurement above 500,000, you use the 90-10 point system, which is 90 points on price and 10 for these RDP goals. On the 80-20 preference point system, from 30,000 up to 500,000, you would use a preference point system. All the procurement that goes below 30, you'd use either a quick telephone quotation system, or you'd use the rotation system that you have on your database. allocate the business. However, what has come to light is that ambiguity is then found between the PPPFA and the BEE Act. The ambiguity is that we have got two pieces of legislation in the public domain. One is the one that is used for procurement. For some reason, the public domain has interpreted this BEE Act also as a tool for procurement, which was not meant to be. But given that the confusion exists, it was then necessary that there should be an alignment that comes in. And we were then directed by the cabinet of the day to then deal with the two regulations and see where can we find alignment so that the ambiguity can be lifted. And some of those shortcomings that were identified within the PPPFA was people or the procurers of goods and services in the various domains would apply the policy in very inconsistent way. And the definition of HDI was so broad that it led to unwanted funding. HDI would talk to historically disadvantaged individuals. Now, if you look at it in broad terms, it would say it would only exclude white male. The rest of the people would be regarded as HDI. Now, this led to a number of unwanted activities, where you would find a white male would then transfer the business to the spouse, and if it's in the spouse's name, it qualifies under HDI, so it didn't really achieve what it's supposed to have achieved. So these two acts were just totally not in sync. So a work group was then established between the National Treasury and the Department of Trade and Industry to ensure that they come up with some alignment around these two acts. Now, the resolutions or the outcomes were that in the long term, we need to repeal the PPPFA in its entirety. And it being repealed, we need to then promulgate supply chain management regulations, which will also look at this BEE principles, which would be an area that would happen in both the municipalities in terms of the MFMA and also in terms of the PPPFA. Now, the process of repealing an act, as members may perhaps also know, that it's a lengthy process. For us to repeal the PPPFA, it needed us to look at what act to utilize. As you know, that the current the current Public Finance Management Act and the Municipal Management Act are currently being looked at to find ways of where they can be improved. And in the improvement process, because that will be a legislative process that will go through Parliament, through all the legislative processes. One sentence would also read that it repeals the PPFA. So through that revision of that act, it will then repeal the PPFA. However, given that that process, it has not yet come to Parliament, it has not yet, it's still in a very infant stage, it would take a little bit of time. But
sorry about my being. I'm not sure. I don't understand what you're saying. I'm not sure other people understand. But if you could repeat what you were saying around this process of receiving where we are now.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. To repeal an act, you need another act to repeal an act. Now, the route that has been chosen in repealing the triple PFA is the revision of the Public Finance Management Act. Now, the revision of the Public Finance Management Act process is still at its very infant stage. Some work has been done, but it has still not served in the Parliament for it to be debated on and so on. So that legislative process has not commenced, and I do not have an idea whether it is in the parliamentary calendar right now. So, and it's a process that is not within my direction. So we're saying we don't know how long that process will take and how it's going to, but for now, something needs to happen, given that this ambiguity has come up, and the call from the public domain and the call that comes from business people, it necessitates that we do something. The ambiguity still prevails. So that process has not started. But given that it has not started, where do we have powers of dealing with issues? It's within the regulations. In the regulations, it's easier to promulgate, amend, and so on regulations. Because it's not a lengthy process. It's a process which is the one that we are following now. So in the immediate and short term, we say we will retain the preference, the triple PFA as a preference act. However, what we need to incorporate into the act is the prescripts and the aims of the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Act. So we would then use, for the points, the preference points, we then use the prescripts of the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment. The 90 and the 80 would remain there as a price. However, on the 10 and the 20, we then would use the balance scorecard methodology. And it would then be the elements of broad-based Black Economic Empowerment, those codes of good practice that are there, would have a generic scorecard. So this generic scorecard that will look at the contribution levels of the various aspirant bidders. So as you know, there are those elements, which is Black ownership, management control, employment equity, skills development, own preferential procurement, enterprise development, and other social economic development. So these elements would then be the elements that we will look at. Now, what it means, it would be that according to how we have advertised the regulations, is we would have a certain level of contribution. If, for instance, you are at level one, and as we go on, you'll see the scales. If you're at level one, you'd receive a maximum points of 20, whilst if you're a contributor at level four, you'd receive the points related to level four. So the calculations will be based as follows. There will be 8 levels. For you to score a maximum of 10 points on the 90-10, or on the 80-20, you'd have to be a level one contributor. Now, you know the balance scorecard. Once it has calculated all the requirements, it gives you as a bidder or as a business, what level contribution are you on in terms of the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act. So it will be against these levels that you'll get the scores. However, we also say that we need to make room for small, medium enterprises also to play in this game. So we move this compulsory procurement of 80-20 from 30 to a million. So initially we said it was from 30 to 500,000. Now we open the gate up to a million. Now anything above a million, we then use a 90-10 point system. These are the thresholds that changes that we propose to change. However, we also know that there are those entities, the micro enterprises, whose total revenue is less than 5 million. Those entities, we call them the exempted micro enterprises. We propose that these entities should have an automatic qualification of level four contribution, given that they may not deal with most of the other points that are needed for them for the balance scorecard. So they go on that automatic level of four recognition. Now, then comes the point is, how would you know that it's a level four, if it's a micro enterprise? How will you know that it is a, the contribution levels of various organizations? Now, we then say that each one of the enterprises need to prove their status. How do they prove their status? They need to give a certificate from verification agencies. Now, I need to pause here and talk about verification agencies. The verification agencies we're referring to are those that have been accredited by SANAS. SANAS is the standards body that we know. So unless they are accredited, they are not going to give a verification certificate. The reason here is, it becomes a business that mushrooms from nowhere, that everybody is a verifier. And we have seen also some cases have been referred to us where verification agencies, these fly-by-night ones, would give an accreditation level on based on the amount of money you pay them. If you pay them 40 grand, they'll give you the right one. If you give them 10 grand, they'll give you a level verification equivalent to the amount of money you give them. So that, of course, doesn't really give you credence. However, there's nothing you can do to the verification agents in terms of making sure that they do not give those certificates anymore, because there is no controlling body for verification agencies. That's why we say they should be accredited. Should there be fraudulent activities identified from the verification agencies, there is recourse of going to the accreditation body to remove them from, or remove or suspend them from issuing accreditation verification certificates. The other thing we say, there are those non-accredited verification agencies that we know have been in the public domain giving out verification certificates. The challenge here would be dates now, given on when this promulgation will happen. But we had anticipated that it would happen faster. So what we said, that those agencies that had verified those organizations up until the 9th of April, when we started with this work, those certificates will only be valid for 12 months. Thereafter, they need to go to verification agencies that have been accredited by SANAS. We also do know that within the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment Act, We have also taken some points that would give us power to take remedial action to all, or that will give us power to take action on those potential suppliers that would give us false certificate, or that would claim incorrectly, then we would be in a position to deal with those. We also say, if business is awarded to a contractor, we propose that the contractor may not subcontract more than 25% of its business to another business that has got a contribution that is less than the status that contractor has. So it should either be equal or higher for you to subcontract more than 25%. But if it's lower, it should not be more than 25%. Here it's also questions of quality and so on, and also to make room that there should be some EMEs and small micro enterprises also partnering with big business. So members may also be aware that some organs of states, especially state-owned enterprises, would have got a way of doing business. They do business in a way that's almost different to what the public sector is doing. We then propose that there should be uniformity within government, that there should be uniformity also within the state-owned enterprises, that these regulations should also apply to them, the state-owned enterprises. Of course, there's a challenge in that the kind of comments we're getting from them are not very... you'd imagine how they comment on this. Now, going forward, what we're saying is these draft regulations, as I said, have been gazetted, and the closing date is the 14th of September. Once the comments have been received, they will be evaluated again by the task team that includes National Treasury and the DTI. And once that has been agreed upon, we'll then request the Minister of Finance to formally promulgate the regulations. Now, here comes the challenge. When will they be applicable? One should also realize that you cannot promulgate today and then get them to be applicable on the following day, because there should be a process of orientation, a process of training, a process of information sessions that should be done throughout the country. We were thinking that there would be a 3 months lead time after promulgation that will allow us to do this process of training, informing all the role players, and we would want to put together a specialized section within, I don't want to call it a unit, but within the unit itself, a specialized section that will be monitoring closely the outcomes of these regulations. So it will also be required of all these other departments or all these public sector that will be utilizing those regulations also to monitor the outcomes of this policy. We have requested that the comments be directed to the addresses given. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. You are waiting for Mr. Matebula. Is this Mr. Matebula?
Chair, this is Mr. Willie Matebula. Mr. Willie Matebula is responsible for all the transverse contracts of government at the National Treasury.
Okay, does he want to add anything, or you're done?
No, we're done. In case there are questions,
he is also in the government.
Okay, colleagues, there you are. The process that we we think that maybe I should have indicated that at the beginning, that we think that we should take is that because these regulations have been referred to a number of committees for the first time, maybe today's aim should be to engage with National Treasury, and then the committees then will come together and decide if there's a need to re-invite the, we'll re-invite them. But for now, we have heard the regulations. Maybe we should engage with the regulations now. Those who want to comment, seek questions of clarity, or questions, or comments, or everything. I'm noting Dr. George, Honorable Dr. George, Honorable Kolonoff, any other hands? Madam Min. Tatana Mabunda, one. Okay. Mamungolo, number five. Honorable George.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a question on the exempted micro-enterprises. They've got an automatic level 4. My question is, how did you determine that they should be at level 4? And also an observation that if you look at the different, the 90-10 and the 80-20, if you are a micro-enterprise for under the 80-20 system, you're getting 60% of the points. But if it's under the 90-20 system, you're getting 50% of the points. So therefore, it looks as if there's actually some disadvantage for smaller business on larger contracts. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Koronoff.
Mr. Chairperson, being a member and never can be a HDI, I just want to ask, unless I do something vertically, but I don't think I can be. Just in a nutshell, the new regulations, is it more fair or not? You know, out of your point of view. Is it more strict now or is it more fair? And
It's fine. National Treasurer will respond to that question.
Thank you, Chair. I've got few clarities. If Babu Malinga can actually help me, I'd like you to refer you to the regulation itself. Mr. Malinga, if you look at the first page, explanatory memorandum, point 2, clause 1 and 2, the regulation says the current preferential procurement regulations, and then it will say the new regulations. Now, then I get confused. The current and the new. What is new? Because if either we amend, if it's new, it's, to me it's like you're starting it all over again. It's new. It's new. What is new? Which way is this new regulation? So if I can just get the clarity. Two, on the same clause, the regulation seems to not to be consistent with the reference whether we use the triple BEE or we use the BEE. And secondly, the regulations tells us that when you go to the definitions now, which are on page 6, point 1, clause C, BEE, the regulation defines the BEE status having the same meaning with the triple BEE. That is not true. Because the triple BEE, why we went for a triple BEE is because there were ambiguity around the BEE status. Because it was talking about the black group and it could not differentiate exactly who were those black group. So I need a clarity on that. And coming back to the document that we have used for the presentation, it's also a clarity. You are saying it takes a long time to make sure that we get the regulation because of the amendment and the repeal and the da 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 da. I'm not too sure exactly what you're talking about, because in the first and foremost, your presentation, you draft it in such a way like us, the politicians, we sit in the department, we understand what is happening. We don't. We are politicians. Now, it is so summarized, you don't even understand the content. Taking, for an example, the very same page that the Honorable Member George was asking, compulsory, you know, that page, threshold values. And I even said to myself, let me check this. Because I don't understand, you know, from the 80-20 to the 90-10, this is what the department is proposing. Did the department look at the social issues here around when we're looking at the state? Because first and foremost, you are saying the 80-20 preference point system from 30,000 rand to 1 million. And they're putting that point. I mean, really, for 30,000, you just need quotations. You just need three quotations. Just three quotations, and you do the purchasing, or you offer the whatever that needs to be done. Why do you have to do the longevity of procurement, the supply chain? Why is that? And that's why maybe Honorable Gordon of saying, is this effective? This is not effective. It actually do not assist the poor of the poorer. If you are saying you are opening the door for the small enterprises, I've got a problem with that, because the document doesn't talk to that. Maybe it's there in your mind, but it's not in your document. So I think I need to stop, because maybe while hours was to listen, and otherwise the document is empty. So I'm sorry, Chair. Thanks, bye. Yeah.
Madam. As bong, who comes back? Oh, but my point.
Thank you, Chair. The first thing, while acknowledging this is a draft preferential procurement regulation, is still a draft according to the heading. I'm looking at slide number 16, preference point system. The ambiguity which were identified there, amongst others, tripolitan was given as an example. I just hope. The last one that I would like just more fleshy on it, the triple BE and triple FPF were out of sync. It might be straightforward, but if you are not acquainted with the economic language, you might not get it correctly. I just want that clarity. The second point, maybe also I'll be taking you back to an extent whereby you shouldn't be putting it in details. But in a mere, you know, example to let us also be acquainted really whenever we're doing our obligations in oversighting, so that we can be able to know exactly what we should be asking, what we are expecting from those who should be doing these preferential procurement regulations. I'm talking about the draft preferential procurement regulations, you know, on those calculation of points systems. I'm failing to put it as a question per se, but what I want you to just to deal and give us a picture in an exemplary format. When we talk about the levels, so that I can understand, and then the number of points, from which scale to which scale, such as 90-10, 80-20. You see, how do we get these points? If you cite in an exemplary format, maybe it will be more open for those who of us who are not yet acquainted with the reality of these points. 10, especially from the 90-10, and then whereby you say whether it's automatically somebody has to score up to 10 points or whether you just find it. So for those who are not acquainted to this system, maybe we can get a clarity. Thank you for explaining a thing which is straightforward.
My follow-up before you come in. I think members, there's confusion from members of appropriation. I know that the other day we had outside National Treasury engage in this document. It was just our own exercise. The agreement was that we couldn't respond to certain questions. If you want to ask to raise the question that you raised that day, you are not happy with, this is the time to do that. That's why I will allow Mamungwabo to raise the question and Honorable Dr. Rabi after you.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is in respect of this presentation. Who monitors SANAS and who comprises SANAS? And I've heard, I hope I heard well, that there is a process of relooking or rethinking of how to clean up the PFMA. If I heard you well, we are going to eventually see that process taking up and engage in that process. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to get further clarity on why was the micro-enterprises with a revenue of less than $5 million, why did it, what were the reasons, the determining reasons that they calculated the figure of less than $5 million as a revenue? This is not profit, sir, this is turnover. Because it varies from sector to sector in the economy, and I'd like to get clarity from one of the two spokespersons, why was it only $5 million? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Rabi. Maybe let's come to the table now, since there are no questions.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think on the actual naming of the document, whether it's an amendment, whether it's a new, I think Honorable Flamini covered me there. I have a few questions, Chair. The first one is related to the very same SANAS. The SANAS verification issue. There are those that were accredited by agencies that were not suitable for that particular accreditation. Why are we allowing that practice? It's like we are condoning if you are giving, you know, a time frame for them to, you know, it's like you are giving, you are condoning the wrong practice that was done. Because to me, it's a irregular practice that does not need to be condoned. Why can't you just say those that, you know, went through the wrong channel should not even be considered at all? Second one is on your remedies for false BEE. You are saying enterprises awarded to contract may not exceed 25%, or for subcontracting may not exceed 25%. To me, you are still vague. It may not exceed 25 6%, but you are not specific. Why don't? Why is it a problem to be specific in this regard? So that people know that if I subcontract, I shouldn't subcontract for more than this percentage, especially to the people who are not equal or above my status level. So that is the area, because the reason why it is so difficult to follow some of our legislation, even regulations, is because of that particular problem. And then coming to the issue of the points, the 80-20 preference point system, I want to agree not only into 80-20, I just want to talk in general. I want to agree with Mam Dlamini. You see, the 30,000 to 1 million, I don't think it's because some of us were involved in these processes before, and it's quite disadvantageous. It's quite disadvantageous. Sometimes that is why you find officials, developing certain initiatives, because they will split, certain amounts just to suit the required amounts. So I think it is important that you say we really think very hard on this matter. And the difference is too huge. I mean, this is supposed to be addressing also the imaging, and unfortunately, majority of those are women. They are disabled, the youth, those that we are really targeting at the moment. I think we have to relook at this. I don't know, it will be in a form of submissions or what, but really this has to be discussed further. You can have a third level. Why can't you have a third tier instead of limiting it to two only? So that we make, if we really want to be as inclusive as possible and to transform, I think this is a key tool to use. You are including taxes in the 1 million. You are saying 30,000 to 1 million. All applicable taxes included. Why? Does it make business sense? Maybe some of us do not understand. Yeah, I think those will be my questions for now, for clarity.
Thank you.
Sorry, Chairperson, can I do the follow-up?
Okay, madam. Before you come in, let's start with who.
Thank you, Chairperson. As the Chairperson mentioned that we had a look at this paper, there were some contradictions somewhere, and that needed a little bit of explanation at 9.1 and 9.2 in the main document, where 9.1 speaks of a contract may, on reasonable and justifiable grounds, be awarded to a bidder that did not score the highest number of points. And two, you said, in a bid other than the one that has got the highest number of points, the organ of state must, in writing, within 10 working days, notify the Auditor General and the relevant treasurer of the reasons for not selecting the bidder that scored the highest number of points. I think that issue also leads us to more and more questions of saying why did you then choose that person, and after choosing that person decide to explain where you should have actually known that this is our bid, that this is the one we're supposed to have. And what is the role of Treasury and the AG there, because you have chosen the bidder. And in planning, we have, you refer to the cancellation of the bid, the cancellation, and which contradicts some, in number three, speaks about planning. If you plan very well, why do you, at the end, in section, I heard it somewhere, 10, yes. You still have to go that route of, again, an organ of state prior to the hours of the bid cancel a bid if these things happen. But you've gone through planning all along, and then the bid has to be cancelled, and you go through the process, the spending, the everything, and that whole cycle of wasting time, that has to do with it. And we talk about bid. Where does a tender come in? Does it mean the same thing when we talk about bidding and tendering? Sometimes it gives some confusion. Thank you, Shepherd.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Chair, for the presentation. I need clarity. Mine, I will not go into details of asking the questions because I'm aware that this is a draft and you are still waiting for... This is a draft and you are still waiting for comments from the public. Maybe after the 14th of September, after the comments have come in, you might see something different from this. I think this is not yet a concluded process because we still have to have comments from the public. But what I would like to understand is the clarity on the process that you want to take in the repealing of the PPPFA. I want to get the politics behind that action. You are saying the PPPFA has got to be repealed. And then at the same time, you are saying the repeal of this act is going to take a very long process. But in the meantime, something has got to be done. So as a result, because it's obvious that the PPPFA is going to be repealed, you are now, as we speak, you want to come up with a preferential procurement regulations, which are going to be based on the prescripts of the BBBE, because that is going to be the current legislation. That's what you are saying. So, does it mean at the same time, whilst you are trying to, because if an act has got to be repealed, we have to use the current one to do whatever, because you can't use that one because it's going off. So does it mean, you talked about the revision of the PFMA, that is whereby I did not understand how does this affect, or is it because you are revising the PFMA with regard to the regulations based on the prescripts of the black BBEE, broad-based black economic empowerment. Yeah, if I can understand that, I think the others will be. And if I understand you well, is that
with this preferential procurement regulation being aligned with the prescripts of the that triple what the BPE is the one that at the end of the day is going to bring change to the points allocation, the 80-20, 90-10. That's why I don't get. If I can understand that process, I think everything will be clear.
Honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, it's just a clarity. I'm going to be short. I will request the department to explain it to me so that I'm comfortable within my my managers, within my brain matter, that how can you set a preferential procurement regulation with a similar for Schedule A public entities and the Schedule B and C entities? Because to me, as a politician, it really doesn't make sense to me that somebody who wants to go and buy Telkom uses the same scoring and the same approach of a system than a person who goes and tender at Eskom to do electrification. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to join Honorable Mashegu, and with regard to paragraph 9.1, which states, you know, that the contract may, on reasonable and justifiable grounds, be awarded to a bidder that did not score the highest points. We mentioned the example of for instance, a building contract where somebody could be the best, have the best price, but we know, or the municipality, or the, whoever the contracting authority is, knows that that is a bad builder, and they can authorize and say, no, we don't want this builder, we want another one. So therefore, 9.1 is very necessary as a you know, paragraph. But 9.2 says then what they've then got to do within 10 working days, notify the Auditor General and the Treasurer the reasons for not selecting the bidder. Now, it doesn't say what happens after that, because you see, if I advance as a reason the fact that the bidder, say, is a female, and that's my reason, I don't like females, I don't want females to have this contract, you know, is that a good enough reason? Because it doesn't state whether the Treasury or the Auditor General must approve of our reasons, or must accept the reasons, or must tell us the reasons are not acceptable, or whatever the case may be. I think we should have clarity with regard to 9.2.
Honorable Sotis.
Yeah, Chairperson, mine is just clarity on page 7 of the Gazette. That is clarity on terminology, K and M. Firm price on K is explained and clear to me. But when coming to M, I just want to know if we mean, does it imply a price that is constant and not subject to change, not affected by any condition?
I'm sorry, I'm sure you're a co-counsel upon a spokesperson. If not. Yes, thanks, Chair. I'm on this issue of summer. To me, Chair, what makes the other agency not to have the similar accreditations with SANAC? Because sometimes this autonomy of one big organization, it creates some implications, it's got its own implication at the end of this day. Maybe if we can get the standard of SANAC as to why the others, we can call them, they are not qualifying on that standard of SANAC. Just to know exactly that this is the standard that should be meshed, so that it's not like a law that if you are not on SANAC, you are out. Just know the accreditation that is 1, 2, 3 that is required
and which is all approved. And if agencies, because you might find good agencies outside there, but the fact that they don't comply with SANAC, they are out. And you can't justify sometimes as to why, what exactly. That's just
possibility of accrediting other organizations other than SANAC. Does it exist? Comrade Fandra?
Thank you very much, Chair. There was an attempt earlier on to comply with your advice that this we caucus here with Nyambos, so as Nyambos can do a submission on our behalf. But that was disapproved by our master, Mashami. He instructed us that the two of us must talk. So we are trying to comply to our master's directive now. Chair, there is this indication that one of the reasons that led to this particular process of new regulations, it was the definition of our HDIs was a bit vague, and as a result led to serious problems of fronting. So one is expecting that in the process of addressing this identified gap, we will then try to, as government will then try to be specific, what do we imply by HDIs, and include that into the designation and the application section, which is part one of the regulations. So I don't see that definition being included here, and I don't know why, because if you don't have that definition here, I think we'll continue to have ambiguity in terms of defining this HDI concept. And secondly, the presenter mentioned that there is some form of disturbing or maybe resistance from our SOEs in as far as the application, because there is this particular approach of ensuring that we have a uniform approach in terms of issues or aspects of procurement. But the presenter cited that the SOE seems to be resisting, and I'm interested to know the cause of their resistance. I mean, the direction on which they base their resistance. So what are their arguments? So as politically one is able to apply his mind appropriately on this particular issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Comrade. Honourable Dr. Church, you wanted to come back.
Thank you, Chairperson. It was a question I wanted to ask on 11.1. Apparently the DTI needs to make some details available regarding specific industries that could have a local bite at the cherry. I just want to know, is the DTI making progress on that, and what format will that take? Will it be a list or something like that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to start by referring to the same clause 9 that the other members were referred to, 9.2. Why are we notifying the Auditor General? I understand on the part of the Treasury, but of the Auditor General, isn't it that the Auditor General is supposed to audit? Are we not confusing roles here in terms of Auditor General coming before his own time? And then there's I'm looking at the general implication of the regulations that because you are saying in your explanatory memo part four of it, the new regulations will further be extended to all organs of state. That is not only national, provincial, municipalities, and parliament. My And I think you must rework that part because it's a bit confusing, the part four, the bullet four. The question is it not going to delay? Because you are saying it might be effected after 3 months because you are still going to train and all that. But then you are overlooking the fact that provinces and municipalities, they have their own supply chain management policies, of which they are using the current triple PFA provisions. And in terms of the weighting, 80-20, 90-20, you know, they've worked it out according to their own situation. Are you expecting them to amend also their policies and within few months again to repeal if possible, because you are saying because the PFMA is going to be amended and there's a possibility of repealing the whole triple PFA, of which it brings me to the next point, Chair. Are we talking repeal? Why do we repeal? Is it that useless? Because, you know, repealing means you're doing away with the whole act. Is it that useless, if I were to use the word? Or is it just a matter of amending, you know, certain areas so that you are able to make it workable? That's my last question. Thanks.
Thank you, Esla. Maybe I should start with the very last question. You know, you're repealing. Why are you repealing that? Because you can't repeal immediately. You're saying that you must enact regulation this side, but not in line with the act that they were supposed to be aligned with, but with another act. Mm-hmm. Now, tomorrow we pass these regulations. This side, on the other side, there is a triple PFA, still what you call still operational. Aren't you setting up yourselves, for instance, for litigation? Because you have identified weaknesses in this triple PFA, but we're not. There's nothing that we're doing it about it in terms of the public eye. There, we're just cutting it there. Now we're starting with other regulations to try to tighten. But I'm not a lawyer, but I know that if there is an act there of parliament that exists there, somebody else has a right to take you to court. And we know that we lose that case, because if we are in contract, in breach of that article of that act, the act exists. Nothing has been said about it in terms of the public. It's just thinking that there are weaknesses, there are gaps, there's ambiguity. We're dealing with it like that. Why don't we confront the problem directly? If there's a problem, take the time that it will take, but you confront it. If you have to repeal it, you repeal it to take that process. I'm not sure, Bamalinga, if I agree with you that if we keep it on, we park it there and we do other things, but by doing that we'll kill it. I think that we really, what you call, really delaying the, what you call, the problems. You know, we're dealing with the Standing Committee on Appropriation. We're dealing with a certain department that has a tender that is being fought for years. They can't, what you call, implement important things that they are supposed to do because of certain, what you call, because of this kind of actions. All that we're saying is it doesn't seem that we learn from the experiences that we're supposed to be learning from some experience. We don't repeat certain things that happen. There's a problem, you confront the problem directly. You don't go around it. I think that that's what we need to do. And if you want to find ways of doing it, I mean, we government, if you want to find ways of accelerating, fast-tracking the process, we can do it. Take it, we can do it. But if you park it, we're really parking a problem. That is with us best bet. But also the relationship, that you mentioned between PFMA and Honorable Saga did raise it. I'm not sure if well. The intention of PFMA has other objectives altogether. You can put whatever you want to put in it, but it has other objectives. The objectives of PFMA are not necessarily those of procurement, but there are guidelines in terms of what needs to be done or what. So do we think that if we amend PFMA, we're going to achieve other things other than what PFMA is made for? I mean, what is intended to do? I think that there might be problems with what we want to do, rather than the question that was raised by my colleague here as to whether repealing is the best, what they call it, option. But if it is the best option, our view, I think, that is that we must confront the problem rather than running around it. The other, what they call it, one part that is not very clear about. You know, Honorable Dr. George raises with respect to Section 11 of the regulations, about the what trade and industry is supposed to be doing. I mean, about the processes that trade and industry is supposed to be following. But my question is a bit different. Is that local? You know, there's a lot of what you call. I normally see in small projects that are done, whether it's in the township, whether it's everywhere. I mean, ordinary people there. If a street is being constructed in my area and you have won the bid, they don't expect you to bring your own labor there to do your own thing. They expect you to employ people around, local people. They talk about local content and all that. Now, what I'm raising is, I think that it would be better if we had a definition of what local actually would mean, so that all of us, we have one understanding of what local means, rather than everyone being different to all kinds of interpretations. For instance, if you're talking trade and industry with other foreign companies coming in, what would local mean? If you're talking about a South African company wanting to start a project elsewhere, what would local mean? That's why I think that maybe it would be what you call maybe wise just to have a definition of what local are we talking about in this what you call instance. I think that the
sorry, Jim, I just add to what you just said.
Sure.
Thank you. What I think you're absolutely correct, Chair, but what I think is that, you know, these regulations don't make any provision, for instance, for, say, a municipality in Polokwane to say, I give a discount for preferential treatment for contractors from Polokwane. And what happens is that, you know, they just get people from Johannesburg and they come do all the jobs in the small areas and there's no rural development for small contractors. And this is, you know, I think also important that we cover that in these regulations.
Sorry, there's tea outside and the time is against us, so we'll not have a break, and those people who would like to have tea, you can always just pick up their cup of tea that side, and maybe staff can just help with colleagues here who would this side of the table who would want to have a cup of tea. But Malin, you are on your own. But
no, I know. Hey, I'm on my own. Maybe one should start off by clarifying the very same point you were raising.
I'm sorry, you know, I forgot something that was raised by the question around this. I think someone else raised it. around this video and what. You know, somebody raised the whole politics behind coming with particular views subjecting or legislation. You put in the threshold 1 million for 80-20 and or above that. This legislation, the Triple PSA, was passed in 2000. Now it's 9 years, 10 years later now. Okay, it's being moved from 500,000 to. But the whole, what you call it, objective that it was intended to achieve, maybe. And that's the question that Honorable Koronov was asking, but in another way. So I think that it was meant to empower your HDR, your previous disadvantaged people. Now, if you're putting this threshold for those of us who have nothing, so say 1 million, over a million, you can't beat. And if it's above that, somebody spoke about, they spoke about ESCOM and a huge, what you call, they want to build a stadium and about ESCOM. So what is this magic about this 1 million? Is it what you call really, would it empower just people that is intended to, the goal that is intended to achieve, would it really achieve? Or rather have that in the world? Okay.
Just to add on the concern on a local search, when it's my legal response, which is a fail. You know, in other documents, local would mean goods that are manufactured locally. But it is not clear on the side of ownership whether you mean people who have been residing there for a number of years or people who just migrated, because the information, you know, flies overnight that when you hear that there's going to be development in a certain area, in a certain province, people migrate overnight and become residents in a particular area. It's not like when you go to address and open an account, they say, how long have you been in that area? If it's 5 years or more, then it's bonus. But with this one of procurement, I just produce maybe my statement of written taxes that I am a resident in that area. But for how long, nobody knows. Because treasure hunters are just flexible. They have all the information and they act accordingly in order for them to qualify.
Just maybe to start on a lighter note on the local. In one province, they needed to procure cars that have got local content. So the guy in Johannesburg then took the cars down to that province and deflated all the wheels and pumped the wheels in that province, so it had local content. Maybe one should start off with the very first point that you raised, Mr. Chair, around the PFMA and so on. Let me explain to the House that the PFMA itself is not for procurement exclusively. There may be areas, there are areas that talk to procurement. Now, the revision that will be coming or that will be done has got a number of other areas which I do not have any control over that are being repealed. But the little area of my contribution there is the procurement area within the total revision. So it's not only meant for procurement, it's meant for many other things. Again, one needs to explain that the parking you were referring to, that we may be delaying the pain. It's not a question of delaying the pain. Is that the process of repeal needs to go through the total legislative process. And I'm not sure whether this particular revision is on the calendar
my control anyway. For me to wait for that process, I don't know when it will happen. But it is not parking. And I must refer members maybe to the beginning of the presentation. I did say that procurement is contained within the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And the Constitution is very clear in 217i that you need to have a preference system. So the preference system is taken as a directive from the Constitution, which then led to us having the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. Now, what we're saying is, with these regulations, we are not taking away this preferential point system. All that we're saying is the 10 points or the 20 points, you only had these 13 RDP goals that you needed to utilize to determine preferences. Now, on the other hand, there are also initiatives by government encouraging industries to transform. Now, that initiative is done via the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment and its associated regulations and prescripts. So that initiative that takes place, on the other hand, needs also, it confused the procurement process. Then we then say that particular initiative should then be also embedded within the preference point system. Now, we remove all the RDP goals. We then take all these points that are referred to in the codes of good conduct, of good practice, of the broad base, and utilize them within the 10 or the 20 point system. Now, the question around local, maybe let's quickly refer to that one, because it does say that the Department of Trade and Industries needs to announce on those industries. You'll realize that at some point in time there was an issue around the textile industry. Now, in the textile industry, which was flooded by textiles that came from other countries, which were very cheap, and that had an impact on the local textile industries, and there was a huge job losses, and it still does. And it is on that the DTI did pronounce themselves and said, if it is a textile textile tender, you need to get a letter from the DTI that you have exhausted all the local suppliers or sources, and you cannot find that, then you resort into bringing textile from outside the country. So it's in those kind of industries that we say they will then determine and tell us which ones are the industries that are bleeding, which one, because we don't really know all of the industries which ones are bleeding. We're only looking at the procurement of goods and services. Okay, maybe let me then start off with some of the questions that have been raised. I want to take them as comments that we need to go deal with, because they're very much pertinent. The first was the 60 and the 50, or how do we determine the levels for EMEs? Why would we say level 4? How's this magic determination of level 4? And then the 5 million rents, I think there was a question around why 5 million rents. 5 million is turnover, it's simple, it's defined by the Act, the Small Business Act, that's what it means. It's only up to 5 million, I can't say more to that. However, now, as small business person, if you look at the codes, where would they score the most? A small business person would not have maybe these relationships of having another extended procurement process that would determine a certain level. So we debated long into this, and the proposal that came, I do not have a magic calculation, a scientific calculation of how we got to 4, but the proposal came that let's start them at 4 and let's find out what the response would be from the public in general, whether 4 is the fair one or which one will they find it to be fair. That's the contribution level. And there was a question whether this is more fair or not fair. I'm not sure. I can't answer to fair and not fair. I can only answer to the fact that we need to remove ambiguity, ensure that there is one uniform system that needs to be utilized. Now, there was also another question that was talking to the definition of broad base and BEE, and that the explanations where we said BEE refers to triple BEE. I think we've noted that comment, and we will definitely look at that comment. Now, the question was, did we consider social issues? I think the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act is clear in itself that it's meant to transform, and part of the transformation and one of the elements of the scorecard is social contribution. So I'm not too sure what it means in the context of the question that was asked, whether we considered social issues. There was also a question of out of sync. Say the triple BEE and triple PFA were out of sync. sorry. All what we're trying to say is these two acts are two sets of statute documents in the public domain that seem not to be talking to one another. So all we're trying to say is let's get that confusion out of the public domain, that we have one document that talks to one thing and it explains everything to the public domain. And the 90-10-80-20, remember that's still not repealed. It's still in. It's still a 90-10 and an 80-20. It's just the application of the 80 of the 20 and the application of the 10 that sort of changes in this particular instance. SANAS. SANAS is an organization that has been put together by an act, and it is controlled by the Department of Trade and Industries, and it is monitored by the Department of Trade and Industries, and SANAS would then look at the standards that are being put together. If the standards that a verification agent needs to have, it should be along these standards. If they deviate from those standards, then they would then be disaccredited. Now, for a long time, we didn't have any control over the verification agencies. And I have mentioned that we have had very unfortunate cases from verification agencies that were not controls. Unless you have a control over them and they are regulated, we will continue having these challenges that we had. Now we say this is the only way they can control themselves, is have an accreditation. And if you have an accreditation, there would be a process that you need to follow to for you to be accredited. And that process, and if I'm not mistaken, was in the, I think it's last year, it was promulgated by the Minister of the DTI, and it has been enacted now, that all verification agencies need to go through the SANAS process. And I know for now there are about 20 or 22 agencies that have been accredited within the population of I don't know how many, thousands of them. Oh, the question of naming the regulation, whether they knew or whether it's an amendment, thank you very much for that comment. They actually should be amendment, and we will correct that and make sure that that's up. Now, why do we continue to utilize those that were incorrectly accredited? I think if you look at the timing here that we have put, 12 months from 9 April, I think by the time these regulations come into effect, they would be out in any case. So I think it would help us. We would still not be utilizing those that are accredited. We'll use those that are accredited. 25% vague.
Sorry about my name. I think the question was, if you have a South African Bureau of Standards, setting standards there, now someone else come on the street corner, they say, I'm setting up my own standard. Now everybody goes to the designated corner, others go to the South African Bureau of Standards. Why can't we regulate this thing? The question was, but why can't you regulate these things and tell people that if you go there, you're going at your own peril? We, as government, this is what this is where we're directing you. So that, again, there's no ambiguity. But if you open it up, people thought that, oh, well, I can go next door, even if it's allowed, at least it would still be considered. So that, the message is not a very clear message. I think that all that is proposed, that let's have a very clear message. Well, if people do their own things, up to them, but they know that this is what they are supposed to do.
Thank you, Chair. That's precisely what we're saying, is it needs to go via SANAS. It's regulating, and SANAS will be the one that will be regulating all the standards. So unless they are SANAS accredited, they will not. We want to consider the accreditation. Yes, I was talking to the grace period when I spoke about the, if you look at the time of implementation, the grace period shall in any case be over. Now, the 25% that is considered to be vague, what we're saying is we should not allow a situation where you win tenders for somebody else. Rather, get your tender and make sure that you have got the right people to utilize, to work on. Now, if you win, you've got this bid that you've won, and you subcontract, it should be subcontracted to a person who's got the right capacity and capability of executing the work. Now, we say 25%, up to 25%, you may not subcontract to a person who has got a level lower than the one that has won the bid. Now, if it's beyond 25%, the person that you're subcontracting to should have equal or more, be of more level, qualifying level than you are. I'm not sure, maybe I didn't get it well. I'm not sure what is the actual concern, but the concern, what we were saying here is it should not go to a person who has got a level qualifying of less than the person that has won the bid. It should only go up to 25%, but beyond it should be either equal or more. And yes, please.
The concern here was around the, I think there were two areas there, if you remember. I said you were not specific in terms of, you just say above 25%, you see. And that to me, you are saying 25% of
contract value.
Yes. Is it in terms of the skills? Is it in terms of the whatever that is required? That's where I'm not clear. Because the practice currently, you may find that the issues that were raised were in, you take anybody, you subcontract, for instance, and the issues are, that's where the issues of fronting come in. Because it's just a matter of meeting the requirement, 25%. I didn't want to go further because I needed to get clarity on that, because I can also go further, you know, with my question, because the application on the ground, you know, proves to be something different. I wanted to check on that.
Oh, okay. No, no, we were talking contract value. We were not talking the various the contract value.
I will give you now 5 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Including editions from the Bob Matemula there.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you
Okay. Maybe we should take some of the comments here and go deal with them when we. I'm going to put them on as questions of clarity. However, maybe Mr. Matebula should respond to passing over of bids, and secondly, to the firm and non-firm. Maybe that should just two things that I want to deal with before he does is there was a question, why are the SOEs resisting? I must just put it on record that it is not the SOEs as formal SOEs, but it is the practitioners within the SOEs that the supply chain management practitioners within the SOEs that are writing us all the comments of resistance. But it's not the SOEs and in their a formal way. And the final one is just to explain, a bid and a tender is the same thing.
Thank you, Chair. I would just respond directly to the issues of the involvement of the Auditor General, the passing of bids, as Mr. Malinga said. The question was raised around a confusion that this actually seems to be creating, that a provision is made for awarding a bid to a bidder or a tenderer that has not necessarily scored the highest points. And on the other hand, such information should then be referred to the Auditor General. And in fact, if you look at the triple PFA by itself, it prescribes that a bidder that scores the highest points, that's why you've got this 80-20-90-10. So the bidder or a tenderer that scores the highest points is in fact the one that is entitled to be awarded the business. But there are instances where that particular bidder who has scored the highest points you know, may not necessarily have the, because here you're talking on paper, may not necessarily have the necessary capacity and so forth, for a number of reasons that you award to another bidder who may not award, I mean, who may not score the highest points. But if you deviate that deviation, because it's not allowed, you know, as a point, so that needs to be referred to the Auditor General and the reasons for a practitioner to have done so. But I think we note, and perhaps we need to go and get clarity, I mean, work among ourselves, what must the Auditor General do with that particular information? There was a concern that perhaps the Auditor General comes in early in the process, when the Auditor General is supposed to maintain independence in the process, yeah, later. So I think we will go and work on that particular issue. The other issue is around firm and non-firm that was raised here. Certain contracts or tenders, bidders would indicate that, look, my price is firm for the duration of a contract, if it is a term contract, or if it is a project, for this specific project, my price is firm. Or if a certain quantities, for instance, you're looking for 140,000 pair of shoes, and the bidder or a tenderer says, my price is 300 rand per pair of shoes, and that is firm until that quantity has been delivered to the end user. Non-firm, is mainly applicable to longer-term contracts, to term contracts, where at some point in time you factor in price adjustment sort of qualifications. You know, there are many economic reasons, you know, that justify prices to move up and down. So that's what non-firm means. And there are formulas that we apply to cater for those, you know, talking on all those issues. So that's basically what that is. But there's another issue, Chair, that I wanted to clarify around whether the current system is fair. The equity and the current regulations, whether it's fair or the ones that the draft amendment regulations. PPPFA focuses on equity, and my colleague referred to unintended consequences that arise as a result of the fact that it focuses on equity, and therefore you have a lot of other issues leading to fronting, etc., etc. So the alignment, because the PPPE Act talks to broader, more than just equity. So perhaps members can then judge whether the fairness thereof, etc., etc. And lastly, the 80-20, why is it still retained? Because the 80-20 is in fact provided for in the Act itself, in the PPPFA Act, not in the regulations, which, you know, could be amended at any point in time. So the legislative process, parliamentary process, you know, is the one that colleague Malina referred to, that it's longer. And so that is it. I think these are some of the issues that I wanted to clarify, but over and above, we've noted all comments, and I guess we will go back and work on those, and we'll still expect from the committee members as well.
No, it's fine. We heard what you're saying, but the other chair will finalize. We'll summarize the whole thing. But we did indicate that it's at a start for us. Chair Mfamat.
Thanks, Chair. I can't summarize. You're sharing the meeting. Don't give you the most difficult task. But Baba Malinga, you know, I was listening very attentively, like all of us. You know, most of what you regard as comments, not actually comments, from honorable members, they are not comments. They are, in fact, I think, are substantive matters that when you put a document down like this, black and white, you should have actually processed those issues so that when you interact with parliamentarians like ourselves here, we don't raise more questions for you. You should actually have clarified quite a number of issues so that we ourselves, when we live here, we know that on this particular matter, the understanding from your side is this. You have noted quite a number of issues here that in your view it is a comment that you need to take into consideration. I think would really appreciate that what you regard as comments, go and work on those issues and probably come back much more prepared to engage robustly with us. This issue is about economic transformation. It's the heart of everything that we're trying to do. The co-chair here, Matulare, raised an issue about the Auditor General 10 days after. I'm not sure whether it's 10 days after or before the actual letter of appointment is given in terms of this thing. And what is the reason for that? Because when you do that, you are anticipating a litigation, probably. The question would be why the Auditor General and not SLA, State Law Advisors, on that matter. It's one of those issues that I think you need to really assist. You know, earlier, when you started your presentation, we should not look at points as percentages. 90-10, 80-20, and so on and so forth. But you need to translate that into the actual... You see, these points are about... This Preferential Procurement Act is almost about state intervention. So there is a percentage in terms of value in monetary terms. It's an area that we may not agree now, but I think when we go and work on this issue that we'll say our comments, I think we'll actually have much broader understanding on this matter. Because I don't agree that the issues raised by honorable members were comments for noting, not at all. I think these are real substantive issues that really needs to be engaged with. Yeah, that's my observation.
Well, summing has been done. But that's one small area that I would like to comment on, Zarina, is the question that the date you have set yourself, the date of the 14th, as closing for comments. And we have only received, this has only been referred to Parliament when? I think that it's as if the referral is just a question of saying no. At least we have consulted with Parliament. But Parliament is doing this in terms of the delegated legislation. So it's not just a question of consultation and that. We're doing it in terms of legislation. So you'll have to look at the 14th, if it is going to be viable, especially in the light of the comments that Chairperson Somari has made and the comment that we made here. Thank you very much. Do you have not a response at your last words?
Thank you very much, members and chairs and co-chairs, for engaging with us. We will definitely come back. We are taking the comments directive. We will come back, we'll work on it and come back more to engage on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Uh,
Shall we invite the